Yellow light!
And I'm walking here!
Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Thursday, to get you through this coronavirus crisis. In a world where few things are reliable, we are reliable on the Jason Rand Show, live on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. We got a ton more to get to. We only have an hour left to do it. The media attacks Florida Governor Ron DeSantis instead of learning from him. Jenny Durkin pretends we're steps away from putting Asian Americans in internment camps. Plus, Pete Hegseth from Fox and Friends, he's going to stop by to talk about this threat to our freedoms during the coronavirus crisis. This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news and information happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, a Republican, has done a simply amazing job reopening the economy in his state. He's been doing it reasonably. He's been doing it safely. He's been doing it urgently. Turns out you can be safe and urgent at the same time, regardless of what Governor Jay Inslee will have you believe. And he was able to do this in Florida without an uptick of coronavirus deaths. And you will see absolutely no positive coverage from 99% of the media outlets out there. And it's not just because they don't like Ron DeSantis for being a Republican. It is beyond that. They are covering their asses. They're covering for all the fear-mongering that they put out there 24/7. They told us over and over and over again some more that what Ron DeSantis was doing was irresponsible and it's going to lead to the deaths of millions. Ron DeSantis, they told us, is a monster with blood on his hands. They said, don't do it. You better not do it. You are reopening too quickly. Don't you dare do it. And you saw piece after piece after piece of hot takes telling us the worst case scenario for what Ron DeSantis is doing in the state of Florida, except it hasn't happened. It did not happen. The worst case scenarios did not come to fruition, quite the opposite. The best case scenarios have. You hear nothing from the media touting these results. You hear nothing about the leadership of Ron DeSantis. Instead, what you hear are people still questioning his data. You hear people talking about Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York. Oh my gosh, he is a leader. He is the best. Ron DeSantis, ew.
You know, it's not like every governor is Governor Cuomo. You had DeSantis in Florida, weak, feckless leadership, waiting for directives from the government.
Oh, that DeSantis, weak and feckless. Not everyone can be like Andrew Cuomo. Oh, isn't he great? Doesn't he have a great handle of how to talk to the people? He's doing these brilliant, informative, daily press briefings. Oh, He's going to be able to take over for Biden as president. And he's hot too, right? You like that kind of New York aggression. He's amazing. New York State has a population of 19.45 million people. As of today, the positive cases of coronavirus there, 353,000. The number of dead, 22,843. Florida, with a higher population of 2,148, has positive cases of 46,944. And deaths of 2,052. New York deaths, 22,843. Florida deaths, 2,052. Andrew Cuomo, hero. Ron DeSantis, zero. Loser, feckless. He's going to lead to so many more deaths. You compare the stats from New York to Florida, it's not even in the same league. Not even in the same league. The New York numbers are disgusting. And yet he is celebrated because he is a Democrat. Cuomo is a success story. A success story who right now is in the middle of a scandal where he was putting sick elderly patients in elder care facilities. There have been a ton of deaths associated with that decision. And instead of taking any blame for it, instead of taking any responsibility, he pushes the blame on Donald Trump.
Anyone who wants to ask why did the state do that with COVID patients in nursing home, it's because the state followed President Trump's CDC guidance. So they should ask President Trump. I think that will stop the conversation.
It shouldn't stop the conversations. It should encourage even more questions of you, because you're lying. The CDC guidance did not say to put sick elderly patients back in elder care facilities unless they met certain standards, certain guidelines. The facility in question had to have been able to self-isolate these folks, have all the PPE that's necessary to keep other folks safe. Under Governor Cuomo, he mandated every single facility take these patients. You could not turn them away. It does not matter if you are not built to keep people safe. You had to take them. That was not from the CDC, you despicable liar. And of course, no one will call him out. He doesn't really do any long-form interviews except with his stupid brother on CNN. The brother who faked a quarantine. The brother who violated the fake quarantine. The brother who turned his story into fake drama on CNN. Chris Cuomo coming out there one day, waxing poetic about how he shivered so hard from the coronavirus that he chipped his tooth. That he saw his dead father in a fever dream talking to him. And yet somehow he was able to do his TV show every single day. From the basement of his $2.6 million home in upstate New York, where he was only hanging out during the show and then afterwards would go for bike rides and then shame people who called him out. That fraud. He has his brother on. It's become a complete joke. You have this scandal going on. You have a whole bunch of people dying in New York. And this is how they talk during the interview.
Wanted to encourage people to get tested, and some people are afraid it's going to hurt. So you had video of it that I want to show the audience of you actually getting tested. Now, a few questions about this process. First of all, is it true that when you were having the test administered, you inhaled and the doctor's finger went all the way up your nose and got stuck and had to be released with a tool? Is that
true?
Just to deal with the record.
She wanted to comment that I have a little button nose, and she was afraid that the swab would actually hurt because it extended my nasal cavity.
Yeah. Most trusted name in news, CNN.
That's CNN?
That's CNN.
I thought that was a YouTube vlogger.
Nope.
Wow.
I know. That's CNN. Super serious news source. Which, by the way, Caitlin Collins, CNN contributor last week, gave a hard time to the president, who tweeted a video of her taking off her mask showing that she's a total phony. Had a face mask on when the camera was on. When she didn't think the camera was on her, she pulls it off immediately. She says, people are dying and that's what you're doing? Hey, Caitlin, why don't you turn your attention to Chris Cuomo and Andrew Cuomo? But he's protected. DeSantis? Nope, he's attacked. Now they're going on the attack saying, these numbers can't be right. Clearly more are dead, but you are lying to us. And they found another story that they can use to bludgeon him with. In his administration, a scientist who spoke out said the state was putting out false data. She was fired. Did you see that story? It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, of course I saw it.
Of course you saw it. Everyone saw it.
It's a big deal.
They were pushing this on CNN and MSNBC. She was brave to come forward and say they're lying about the data. MSN says Florida scientist said she was fired for refusing to manipulate COVID-19 data. They write, the scientist who created Florida's COVID-19 data portal wasn't just removed from her position on May 5th. She was fired on Monday by the Department of Health, she said, for refusing to manipulate data. Gives a little bit of meat to the hounds who are hungry on the left in the media, because they don't believe these numbers, and now they have someone that they can use to prove that DeSantis is lying. The scientist's name is Rebecca Jones. She said in an email to Florida Today that she single-handedly created two applications in two languages, four dashboards, six unique maps with layers of data functionality for 32 variables, covering 500,000 lines of data. Her objective was to create a way for Floridians and researchers to see what the COVID-19 situation was in real time. She knew all the data, and she was told to manipulate it. And when she said no, this hero, this brave woman, this brave scientist said no, and she was fired. People jumped on this story on the left. Blue check marks jumped on this story, and they said, see, Florida is not a success story. The numbers are wrong. They're cooked. They're not as good as they say. We believe Rebecca Jones because now Believe All Women is returning to the Democratic Party, and it's now for scientists. You have the agricultural commissioner, Nikki Fried, who, by the way, is not a partisan. She's a partisan. Calling for an investigation.
At the best, this is a deceptive cover-up. At its worst, this is a dangerous public safety and public health.
So there's no other explanation. At its best, it's a cover-up. In her world, there's no way that this is incorrect. At its best, cover-up. At its worst, people are going to die. Only Rebecca Jones is not the scientist you think. She's not a scientist. She has a degree in journalism. She has a degree in communications. She did get a PhD in geography. She's not a data scientist. She wasn't even the one who put together all of the dashboards that they're using. She was part of it. She was a big part. She wasn't the chief architect. Here's Ron DeSantis.
So first of all, okay, so one, she's not a data scientist. She's somebody that's got a degree in journalism, communication, and geography. She is not involved in collating any data. She does not have the expertise to do that. She is not an epidemiologist. She is not the chief architect of our web portal. That is another false statement.
She was updating data that she probably did not even understand, but she went into it with an agenda, and she disagreed with the scientists, the actual scientists who do this for a living, who have an expertise in this. They said the data is correct. She, the woman who really knows the study of rocks, literal rocks, she disagreed. She was fired, not for refusing to manipulate data. She was fired because she was ignoring the actual scientists. Remember the ones we were told that we need to listen to. We need to pay attention to.
What she was doing was she was putting data on the portal, which the scientists didn't believe was valid data. So she didn't listen to the people who were her superiors. She had many people above her in the chain of command. And so she was dismissed because of that and because of a bunch of different reasons about how she did. Come to find out, she's also under active criminal charges in the state of Florida.
Wonder what those could be. This hero, this whistleblower, she's under investigation for criminal charges? According to a police report, the Tallahassee police show a man claimed to be a victim of revenge porn by Rebecca Jones. This happened back in June of 2019. The man told police he had an injunction against Jones for a year until it recently expired. He said Jones posted a website which included naked pictures of him and shared it with his place of employment and family members. Now, she's pled not guilty, but this is an ongoing thing. She's now facing misdemeanor stalking charges. Is this the one person you want to get behind? Is this the hero that you want to get behind? Is this the person you want to use to go after Ron DeSantis? Do you hear any of this? about this so-called scandal of firing her? Do you hear much of MSNBC or CNN covering this aspect?
She's being charged with cyber stalking and cyber sexual harassment. So I've asked the Department of Health to explain to me how someone would be allowed to be charged with that and continue on, because this was many months ago. I have a zero tolerance policy for sexual harassment. So her supervisor dismissed her because of a lot of those reasons, and it was a totally valid way, but she should have been dismissed long before that.
The media knows she's not someone who's reputable. The media knows her background, and they are ignoring it because all they want to do is use her for their agenda of going after DeSantis, a Republican who they do not want to give credit to. And he has had enough.
Our data is available. Our data is transparent. In fact, Dr. Birx has talked multiple times about how Florida has the absolute best data. So any insinuation otherwise is just typical partisan narrative trying to be spun. And part of the reason is that because you got a lot of people in your profession who waxed poetically for weeks and weeks about how Florida was going to be just like New York. Wait 2 weeks, Florida's going to be next, just like Italy. Wait 2 weeks. Well, hell, we're 8 weeks away from that, and it hasn't happened. Not only do we have a lower death rate, well, we have way lower deaths generally, we have a lower death rate than the Acela Corridor, D.C., everyone up there. We have a lower death rate than the Midwest, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio. But even in our region, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida has the lower death rate. And I was the number one landing spot from tens of thousands of people leaving the number one hot zone in the world to come to my state. So we've succeeded, and I think that people just don't want to recognize it because it challenges their narrative. So they got to try to find a boogeyman. Maybe it's that there are black helicopters circling the Department of Health. If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
Last question.
What I wouldn't give to trade Jay Inslee for DeSantis. We'll throw in some draft picks too.
That's nice. Look at you.
I'm going all in. You can get the first three rounds. I am turning over to you.
That's a huge trade. Blockbuster, you might say.
We would still win out on that. We would still come out on top. So I'm willing to negotiate. I know you're not supposed to actually say that. I'm willing to negotiate. You can have our lieutenant governor. You can have, we'll throw in Shama Sawant. Oh, that'll screw it up.
Yeah, they won't want that.
Never mind. You can have anyone you want. Give us Ron DeSantis for just a month. Just a month. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
If you didn't catch this breaking news last hour, the Employment Security Department here in Washington State, they gave away hundreds of millions of dollars paid out to false employment claims made with stolen identities of some 10,000, actually tens of thousands of Washingtonians. That is why you haven't been getting your unemployment.
As we got a better sense of the scale and scope of the fraud that was being perpetrated, it was necessary for us to pause payments to be able to put additional measures in place that would help prevent fraudulent claims from being paid out.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. And Susie Levine, the commissioner for ESD, still has a job. She should be fired immediately, if not sooner. If she had any respect for you, for the taxpayers, she would step down right this second. But instead, in the AP, she's quoted as bragging about protecting even more money from not going. So, yeah, you know, we lost a few hundreds of millions of dollars, but had we not acted, we would have lost even more. That's not a brag. Susie, that's not a brag, Susie. You should be without a job right this second. You should be the one who's waiting 9 weeks for an answer on your unemployment claim. You should be the one who's waiting 9 weeks to collect her unemployment check. Not some of my listeners. I've heard from some of them texting me in at 1-800-465-8770. telling me that they or a girlfriend or wife or a husband or a boyfriend are in a similar position where they are still waiting just for a phone call to acknowledge that ESD even knows they exist. And yet Susie Levine still has a job. Hundreds of millions of dollars. That's our taxpayer dollars. That's our money. And this happened under Jay Inslee's watch. This should be a stain on his career. This should be a stain that follows him anywhere he goes. Hundreds of millions of dollars that you gave to them, trusting that they've got their ducks in an order, and they didn't, and we lost so much money. Money that they say they're going to work really, really hard to get back, but they're not going to get it back. They're not going to get it back. Maybe the federal government is able to step up and do their investigation. The FBI is involved. Department of Labor is involved. This is utter incompetence. It's weird how we went just a few days ago, $1.6 million paid out, and now it's hundreds of millions of dollars paid out. They knew that. Unless you're telling me you didn't know the difference between 1.6 and hundreds of millions of dollars. You're just now figuring that out? Absolutely pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. When we come back, speaking of pathetic, Mayor Jenny Durkin. Oh, God forbid if she were governor. Jenny Durkin is now on this bandwagon pretending that there's a whole bunch of anti-Asian coronavirus-related hate crimes happening. And she's getting some help from a local news agency. We're going to get to it when we come back right here on the Jason Rancher. Welcome back to the Jason Rancher. Show. We are live on this Thursday afternoon. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Pete Hegseth is going to stop by. He's got a brand new book out called American Crusade. You're not going to want to miss our conversation, but let's talk about the media pretending that there is a rash of hate crimes against Asian Americans over the coronavirus here in the Seattle area. They're doing that because it's a good storyline. It's a really good narrative to pick up. There's drama. There's victims. There's the ability to play heroes standing up for them. Cairo 7 covered this last night. I like Cairo 7. I like the reporter Jessica Oh in all of this. They have screwed this story up so badly. So badly. They start by pointing out that story we talked about. It has to be at this point 9 weeks ago, 10 weeks ago. This family, a dad and his boy, they went to the Costco in Issaquah. And the boy who was scared of getting the coronavirus, this was about the time where people started to talk about the coronavirus a lot more. He was wearing a mask. And one of the vendors passing out samples at Costco saw him and asked if he had the coronavirus. She was freaked out. Now, remember, at the time, no one was being told to wear masks, nor was anyone actually wearing masks. In this country, that is not a cultural norm to wear a mask outside. When you see someone in a mask, what is it that you assume? You assume that they're sick.
Like, really, really sick.
Really, really sick. That was the assumption that any reasonable person would have made. But to his dad, this kid's dad, Devin, it was evidence of a bias incident.
Worst things will happen on the street.
Yeah.
As long as these pandemic frustrations build up.
It's going to get even worse. So then Cairo points out to the incident we talked about on this show with exclusive details of Kurt Lynn. He got into a traffic altercation with some other dude. One of them cut the other off. We're not entirely sure which one did. They're not giving me the incident report. Weird, huh? They refused to give it to me. And at some point, they pull into a parking lot. And the white dude says something to the Asian dude. It's a slur. Go back to China. Now, originally, when Kurt Lynn spoke to the officer, he did not say a racial slur was delivered. Later on, he mentions a racial slur. Not at the beginning. Not when the cop was there. Not at all. Not that that matters in this particular case because it wasn't a crime, but he withheld that information. He felt like he was being blown off by the cops.
He said there was no law broken, that this man was exercising his First Amendment rights.
He was.
Regardless of how I felt about what he was saying.
Yeah, your feelings are not law. Your feelings being heard is not breaking the law. Now, if he used the racial slur that you say he used, it is, of course, despicable. That's not an anti-Asian coronavirus-related crime. That had nothing to do whatsoever with the coronavirus. And yet, Cairo 7 is using this as a point to say, oh my gosh, look at the rash of anti-Asian hate crimes, bias incidents. So then Cairo says Seattle police have received 6 reports of bias incidents since March 10th. They don't mention that most of them aren't actually crimes. They mention just 6. Now, 3 of them or 4 of them are very clearly crimes. They're disgusting. They're despicable. I hope we catch the people. And please tell us their names, the people who did this. I will happily blast them. Some of them are homeless, so they probably won't listen. But I will happily put them on blast. 4 instances is not a rash of hate crimes. But now, Mayor Jenny Durkan is pretending, and I'm sorry that, Peyton, you have to listen to this as an Asian American.
I've been preparing for this.
I don't think you can prepare for something like this because she says, she implies that we're heading back to a point of internment camps.
We had the Chinese exclusion laws. We had the Japanese internment. Those were mistakes we made as a city, and we cannot go back to those dark places.
We cannot go back to the dark places of excluding businesses or allowing businesses to exclude Chinese people. And we can't go back to the place where we put Japanese Americans in internment camps.
You're right. I wasn't ready.
Are you going to be okay?
I might be able to finish the show. Tomorrow.
You need to take a day. And maybe you take the day to, you know, do some self-defense courses, because apparently they're coming after you and they're going to throw you in an internment camp. The Chinese exclusion stuff won't apply to you. Although, maybe they'll just say, oh, well, he kind of just looks Asian, because we might be Chinese.
It's the worst.
She wants you to believe. She doesn't want me to believe this. She wants, and this is no kidding, she wants Peyton to believe that things are so bad and they're getting so bad that she legitimately fears we're going to start throwing Japanese Americans into internment camps. Japanese Americans, by the way, which is not anything to do with coronavirus, which is from China. But Japanese internment camps are now on the table as a potential end result of the rash of crimes. And then Cairo 7 did something that drives me so nuts. It's not that they don't give the context and they air without any pushback this stupid comment from Mayor Jenny Durkan. This is how they end the story. Officials believe bias crimes are being underreported due to fear. Now, they don't explain the fear. Some folks on Twitter told me that some people in the Chinese American community don't like calling cops. And the tweet said, you could understand why. To which I said, I don't understand why. Or he said, for good reason. I said, what good reason? Didn't get an answer to that. Officials believe bias crimes are being underreported due to fear. Do you know what they're doing in that sentence? Peyton, do you know what they're doing in that sentence?
No. What are they doing?
I'm going to give you a masterclass in how this works. What do they want you to believe?
They want me to believe that people hate me.
They want you to believe hate crimes are going up because they hate you. Right?
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment of what they're saying? They're trying to say there's a whole bunch of hate crimes and they're targeting Asian Americans. Okay? What did I say yesterday about the data?
That the data is inaccurate.
What is the real data? What does the data say? Is that there's a hate crime spree or the opposite?
The opposite.
That there's not a rash in hate crimes. I have the data on my side and it makes my case. And when you have data that's on your side, it makes it easier to win an argument, correct?
Correct.
when they say officials believe biased crimes are being underreported due to fear, they have created a system in which they can't possibly be wrong. When they don't have the data, they can say, oh, it's because it's not being reported. When they do have the data, they say, look at the data. It shows that we're right. When they don't have the data, they say, it doesn't matter we don't have the data. It doesn't matter at all that we don't have the data because it's wrong data. People are just too scared to report it. So in other words, you are always right with the opinion you present. You are 100% always right, and no one can look at data and say, oh, well, the data maybe says a different thing, tells a different story. They create the rules so they can win the argument. It is pathetic, but it's transparent. So it lets us call it out. Pete Hegseth from Fox and Friends, he's going to be stopping by in about 5 minutes right here on the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. As the Seattle City Council moves to stop private property owners from kicking out illegal homeless encampments, to the governor saying you can't cut your own hair, I don't think there's been a better time in my lifetime for my next guest's brand new book. It's called American Crusade, Our Fight to Stay Free. Pete Hegseth is the co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. He is a Fox News senior political analyst, and his book, American Crusade, is out right now. If you buy it on Amazon, it's going to piss off a socialist city council members. So please purchase the book right now on Amazon. Pete Hegseth joins me. Welcome to the show.
I love that. Thank you, Jason.
We always push people to Amazon because the council hates them so much. So the book is a celebration of what this country stands for, the principles behind this country. And what kind of struck me, just literally in the first page, you take issue with something that's bothered me for a while, this idea that the left is the friend of the right. And you call that out. Why is it important to call that out?
Because they're not. Because they're not to be compromised with or negotiated with or to work with, because they are antithetical to Americanism, to the founding principles. They reject the very root of what makes America exceptional and special and the land of such freedom and prosperity. They're not your daddy's Democrats anymore either. This is not John F. Kennedy, who was a tax-cutting, pro-life, anti-communist. These are people who are giving into socialism, giving into globalism, giving into every ism you could imagine, which I break down in the book. And our only alternative is the categorical defeat of them, which is why I thought crusade was an apt word for this. And I pull out some historical examples of that. We're in a battle with them, and we got to win it.
Why do you think they shifted the Democratic Party to what they've currently become?
I think it's an intentional strategy of progressives, of the left. So they don't start in politics. Politics is a lagging indicator, right? So the Democrats are responding to cultural trends, to educational trends. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez didn't come out of nowhere. She came out of the institutions that formulate minds to think the way that she thinks. So they focused first on education. Elementary school, high school, universities with their elite, godless elite view of America. And then they move into movies and culture and Disney and social media and now they're in our businesses. In every place where enough pressure to conform, to be socially just, to be woke, and to conform to new ideas, wherever they can win, they take it. And then it moves into politics. So I think the Democrat Party is merely caving to a really unfortunate trend in our culture over the last 60 years, which the left has been successful in capturing.
And what they do, and I think this is it's an interesting strategy, it's a worthwhile strategy, they try to change the language. You don't say illegal immigrant, because that focuses on the fact that they're literally breaking the law, so you say undocumented. And then it kind of forces folks who are kind of down the middle or maybe not all that political to change the way they think about issues.
Bingo. Yeah, I mean, you could have co-authored this sucker. That's exactly what it is. When you control the language, you control everything. And our elites decide what's politically correct, what's acceptable. It starts in academia. Mm-hmm. Academia is where really dumb ideas that make no sense. That's where they start to socialize them and make them acceptable. The lunacy becomes acceptable in the Ivy League and the ivory towers, and then they start to trickle it everywhere else as they test what they can get away with. And it starts with language, what you can say. I talk all about that in the book, the weaponization of language, how they talk about it, and how we have to do like Trump has done, which is not accept their language barriers and talk as we've always talked, open and as free people.
The book is called American Crusade, Our Fight to Stay Free. Make sure you purchase it right now. It is out right now on Amazon. Purchase it there. American Crusade is the name of the book. The author is Pete Hegseth. A lot of your insight comes from your personal story, not just as a veteran, but as a former candidate in Minnesota, which I vaguely remember you talked about in the past, but I didn't realize how intense it was. What did you learn from that experience?
I learned I never should have been a candidate in 2012, I'll tell you that. You didn't hear about it because nobody heard about it. I lost to the biggest loser of all time in statewide history. So, listen, it was a humbling experience. It taught me a lot about what I didn't know. I jumped right into it as sort of an establishment. I thought I was a conservative, but it was more of an establishment run. I was a vet fresh back from the battlefield. Hey, I'll try to bum rush the process. And I was running to run against Amy Klobuchar, who, you know, now eats her salads with a comb and is a failed presidential candidate, but might be the vice president. Canada, who knows? And it just, I realized how out of touch I was with the grassroots and the impulses of the early Tea Party and the Liberty Movement, of people who said the Republicans have failed us for a generation. They promise these things and they never deliver. They're campaign conservatives, but don't have a real core. And that movement, which I wasn't able to connect with then, is effectively what manifests in Trump's candidacy. And my own conversion was a part of that realization. And so I talk about how I lost in 2012, and I'm so glad that I did. I'm glad people didn't vote for me. I would have been a terrible senator.
Well, and you talk about your conversion. You had a similar situation than probably millions of Americans. I'm included. I wouldn't have called myself a never Trumper in a traditional sense, but when he was running, I didn't necessarily want, he was not my first choice. But then as I see how the media is covering him and how the Democrats have decided to completely change, I mean, I changed my tune to become a really big Trump supporter early on in the process. And you said yourself, you were almost a never Trumper.
Yeah, I start the second chapter of the book by saying, hi, my name is Pete Hegseth, and I was almost a never-Trumper. And not now, like you said, as a convert, I'm one of the most enthusiastic supporters of him, because you realize the moment that we're in. But yeah, I was looking for the silver-tongued conservative alternative to Obama. You know, I was with Rubio first and then Cruz. I tell some funny stories about how Trump... I tell some funny stories in the book about how Trump ribbed me about that pretty hard when I first was interviewing for VA secretary and all that, and rightfully so. But I didn't understand the moment, and I didn't understand what he represented and the stakes of how far the left had gone, and how the Republican establishment had ignored real Main Street issues, instead going with sort of think tank DC view of conservatism, things like immigration, things like trade, things like the foreign policy consensus. Trump crashed that party and reoriented a lot of our focus in all the right ways. America first makes sense once you understand it. And I do talk about those conversion moments where the light bulb goes off and you say, okay, I get this guy and I get what we're up against, and he's a fighter and that's exactly what we need. Let's do this. And in 2016, we didn't know if he'd win. I mean, the reason we are where we are is because everyone thought Hillary would win, so they spied on his campaign and thought they'd never see the light of day of it. But now in 2020, we know who he is, and the left, we know how much the left hates him. That's what makes it such a seminal moment for the future of our country.
How's the coronavirus response that you've seen from Democratic governors playing into some of the concerns that you outline in American Crusade?
Playing right into them. I mean, the title of the book is American Crusade, but as you mentioned it, the subtitle is way more important, Our Fight to Stay Free. And the whole manuscript went in before COVID-19. There's one mention of coronavirus because it was right as it was starting when I turned the manuscript in. And at this moment, this response of autocratic Democrat governor is a perfect example of what fighting to stay free means. I mean, out here in New Jersey, our governor, Phil Murphy, famously said the Bill of Rights is above his pay grade. He doesn't think about it when he's making decisions. I mean, in Minnesota right now, Governor Walz is saying, okay, maybe a few of you can go back to church, but no singing. You're not allowed to sing at church. I mean, the arbitrary nature that have no grounding in public health, how they're picking winners and losers, your job's essential, your job's not essential, you can stay closed forever, don't worry about it. It shows you how dedicated they are to power and to control, and how they don't understand the free market, and how a small business owner needs the job, the income that they have. So I love this revolt of what I call it, the revolt of the salon owner, and revolt of the gym owner, and revolt of the barber, and revolt revolt of the restaurant owners who are saying, we're opening up. And if enough people can do that together, we the people can say we're open.
100%.
And the governors can't say much about it.
So before we let you go, Brian Kilmeade was on the show last week. We had a little bit of a competition to see which state was crazier and more inconsistent on the coronavirus, Washington or New York. Now, I happen to think that Washington is worse. I will give you the opportunity in 30 seconds. Why is New York so crazy?
Why is New York so crazy? Because of the amount of navel gazing that goes on. Because everyone that broadcasts on national television lives there and thinks the whole country is New York City, right? They've been grown, they think it's the center of the universe. So they're reporting as if everyone lives on Madison Avenue and everything needs to be closed indefinitely. And so they're obsessed with themselves. And then they hold up Governor Cuomo as the example, yet he's the one who's been stuffing COVID-19 patients into nursing homes. Although I'm sure, I have no doubt, I've seen what's coming out of Washington. You guys have it pretty darn bad out there, I got to say.
Bad here. American Crusade, Our Fight to Stay Free. Please purchase this book right now. In fact, if you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-877, he'll go ahead and send you a link so you can just purchase it right now on Amazon. Again, it's called American Crusade. It's by Pete Hegseth. Pete, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. You've been listening to The Jason Rant Show. Again, text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-877, and I'll send you a direct link so you can purchase the book American Crusade by Pete Hegseth.